I may not have a license to kill, but liberalism dies a little every time I pull the trigger on it. This is a conservative's perspective. Hey everybody, James Bostic here, Conservative's Perspective. What's up? Everybody doing good? Good. I'm really happy to hear it. It's been a minute or two since I've done this, and for those of you who came in late, and that was something that goes back about 175 years ago in the comic strips with a guy named the Phantom, the ghost who walks. And on Sundays, they would kind of recap. Because, you know, you had like the 3 or 4 panel strip during the day, and then on the Sunday funnies, it was in color, and, you know, it was a much bigger portion of the adventure. And that was what they would say for those who came in late, and then they would kind of like recap what was going on. And that's kind of what we're going to do here. About 3 years ago, or so, 3 years ago last September, my mom passed away. And she had lived a full, rich, and loving life. Terrific gal. I loved her without end, still do, miss her, always will. But it was a blow. It was really kind of a tough blow for me. And there were a couple of other things that happened in addition to that, but the bottom line was I kind of lost my enthusiasm. I kind of lost my passion, my joy for things that I was doing, and this was one of those things. And it was just kind of tough. Didn't feel like doing it. Didn't really see a whole lot of point in doing it. Didn't really feel like I was successful at it. Started to feel that maybe the reason I wasn't successful at it is because I wasn't any good at it. And that may or may not be true, but you don't have to be good at something to love it. You know, I love bowling, I love golf, and I suck at both of those. I haven't played golf in 25 years probably, but I still bowl, and I've been bowling for a long time. And I'm never going to get out of the 80s to mid-70s from a handicap, and I don't care, man. I'm going with some really nice people in my team, and I love them, and we have a great time, and so I don't worry about that. But there were a lot of things that I lost enthusiasm for, and this was one of them. And during Donald Trump's campaign, his third campaign for the presidency, I thought, well, this is great. And I felt a little bit energized, and I thought, okay, well, you know, this is going to be the time for me to jump back in this. And I didn't. And here it is, January 4th, 2026 of the new year. And over Christmas vacation, which for those of you who came in late, I'm in the school business, and I've been in the school business 20 some odd years now. I decided to make a commitment to this, and you know, I wanted to, but it was like I was overwhelmed by events, you know, in terms of doing this, because it's impossible to catch up. You just got to jump back in. And my intent was always to try and catch up, come back up to speed on, you know, whatever it was that was going on. And it didn't work, man. It did not work at all. It was, man. It was totally messed up. So here we are. And I got to pick up somewhere if I'm going to get back on this, if I'm going to be serious about this, if I'm going to be for real. And I'm going to try and recapture that love, that enthusiasm, that joie de vivre. I guess that's how I said it. Anyway, here we are. And I'm going to start with something that's been on my mind for a few months now, and that is a biblical verse. And it comes from the book of Matthew, chapter 25, verse 23. And it is this. Well done, good and faithful servant, because thou hast been faithful over a few things, and I will place thee over many things. Enter thou into the joy of the Lord. Most of us just look at the first couple of words of that, well done, good and faithful servant. But God goes on and he says, why it's well done, why you've done such a good job, why you've demonstrated this faith. And that leads me to the murder of Charlie Kirk. I know, Charlie's cold and dead and been in the ground for a few months now, but I haven't talked about it. And there have been a lot of things in the aftermath of Charlie Kirk's death that moved me, that gave me a lot of pause. And I had seen it before, more than one occasion, with the left. And, excuse me, there is a conclusion that I came to a few years ago, and that is this: the world is overflowing with evil and malicious people, ignorant people, evil, ignorant people. And I watched people whom I thought I knew rejoice at the death of Charlie Kirk. They were the same people that rejoiced over the death of Ronald Reagan. They were the same people that rejoiced over the death of George H.W. Bush. Any Republican or conservative, prominent Republican or conservative who passed in the last 25 years, people on the left, they're all about it, man. That's their jam. They love it. They get excited over it. They root. They cheer. They rejoice. Are there people like that? Would there be people who stood up and cheered when Bill Clinton died? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Would there be people who on our side that would stand up and cheer when Nancy Pelosi kicks it? Absolutely, there will be. And there are going to be a lot of people that speak negatively about them. Wait till Donald Trump dies. You want to see rejoicing on the left? You want to see Democrats peeing on themselves and one another, dancing in the streets with joy? You wait till Donald Trump dies. You wait. And yes, there was a tremendous tragedy in the murder of Charlie Kirk. And that tragedy was compounded by the unforgivable behavior of the people who rejoiced, ignorantly or not, mostly ignorantly, in his death. But in the time since Charlie Kirk's murder, and in the weeks following his murder, we heard this verse a lot. Well done, good and faithful servant. Well done, good and faithful servant. And I have thought a long time about that. And what Charlie Kirk was doing as a young father and husband who was saved, who gave his life to the Lord, who accepted Jesus as his Savior. That was his mission. That was his focus. That was his direction. He didn't deviate from it. He didn't deny it. He defended it. He disseminated it everywhere he went. His mission was to work, to engage, and to help people, to point them in a direction, to tell them, hey, you know, yeah, you know, you're doing what you're doing and you're here in college and everybody has told you that this is cool and you're doing the right thing by doing this and taking these attitudes, and you know what attitudes that are being espoused in the majority of colleges and college, in the collegiate system here throughout the United States. They said, but you know, there's another way. Yeah, you can go to college, you can get an education, you can do all those things, but there's another way. You don't have to immerse yourself in these things. You don't have to believe everything that these people tell you is true. And he was successful. He was making inroads. He was making progress. And that could not be tolerated, and it wasn't. So Charlie Kirk was murdered. Were there more than one actor in his murder? Yeah, probably. Maybe not. It may have been the one loose wing nut, the ghoul. And here's the thing. It doesn't matter if it was just this one guy acting independently, or if this guy had governmental assistance or other outside assistance in coming up with this and doing it. Doesn't matter. Charlie Kirk's still dead. For what crime? For what crime? Well, he was killed because of his beliefs, because of his belief system, because of his sense of mission, because of his intent to share that system of beliefs, to share those values, to share that love of God with primarily the youth of this country. And as I said, he was making inroads. He'd been doing this for about 10 years. He was an impressive guy. He was a smart guy. He wasn't a college-educated guy, but that didn't matter. And if you watch any of his videos, you see this. But I asked myself, semi-seriously, in those weeks after Charlie Kirk was murdered, and I would think about that phrase, and it was used about him. You know, like I said, in the weeks after his murder, we heard it a lot, and there was a reference, you know, references to Charlie Kirk. What would be said of me? That was what I thought. Now, I'm 63 years old. I don't have nearly as many tomorrows as I do yesterdays. My parents lived long lives. My dad was 88 when he passed, just a few weeks shy of his 89th birthday. My mom, born in May, and she died September after her 89th birthday. So, you know, the genetics are there, and I do a fairly decent job of taking care of myself, and so it's possible I still got a little while left. But at the end of that time, when it happens, and I die, is that what God is going to say to me? And I got to be honest with you, it was only in the aftermath of Charlie Kirk's murder, and we hear this phrase, and it resonated, and it gave me pause. And I started thinking about that. I understand why Jesus died for all of us, for our sins. I got that. I know why he did it. I know why he's my Savior. I understand those concepts. And I understand them better now, I think, perhaps, than I did 25 years ago when I made that decision and I accepted Jesus as the Savior. And I'm guessing maybe, like I said, it's because, you know, I'm getting closer to that exit ramp than I was 25 years ago, 30 years ago. And I thought long and hard about, would that be said of me? Have I accomplished the things that Charlie Kirk has? No. No, 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 no. No. Have I lived a life as a Christian that I should have lived? No. No, 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 again. Lots of failures, lots of bad decisions, lots of selfishness, lots of ugly things. So I am nowhere near as far along in my spiritual walk at 63 as Charlie Kirk was when he was murdered. But on the other hand, God knows I'm not Charlie Kirk. God knows I'm not Charlie Kirk. But you get the idea. I've spent a lifetime in the education system. I hope that I have done well and I've made positive contributions to the kids that I've come in contact with over the last 21. February, next month, we'll start my 21st year in school business, in special ed. I hope so. I feel kind of good about it because there are a lot of kids that I knew from school. Maybe I didn't even have them in class. Maybe they weren't, I'm using my air fingers quotes, students. But they were just kids that were in my sphere of influence. And I tried to encourage. I tried to uphold. So maybe. Maybe not. I don't know. I still have a few years left to do some good, and that's going to be my intent. But I think it's a question worth asking. All of us. When we hear that scripture, well done, good and faithful servant. Will we hear it? Have we done well? Have we been good and faithful? Have we worked to help those whom we have seen needing help, and it's been within our power, it's been within our abilities to give them help, should we choose? I want to think, I really, really want to think that I have done that overall throughout my work in the school system, and not only there, but you know what, in life, man, in life. Now, I don't come into contact with too many people outside the school system. I've pretty much hermitized myself, as Ernest E. Bass would have once said, and I come home and I get up in the mornings and I go to school. And I work with these guys, and at the end of the day, I come home, I have dinner, and my circle of friends is very, very, very small. And I don't know if that's just a natural consequence of the aging process, because, 15 years ago, we won't go back 25 years ago, we'll go back 15 years ago, 10 years ago, I was a considerably more social person than I am these days. And I'm comfortable with it. I'm okay being by myself. I miss my dog. It's like I miss my mom. I miss my dog. She was an exceptional companion, and I was perfectly content to stay by myself. And you know what? I know this is, we're kind of meandering, but at the same time, we're kind of staying on the topic, which was this particular Bible verse that I was talking about. And I think it is something, it behooves us, I think, to examine. And, okay, I am not Billy Graham. I'm not an evangelist. I'm not even a guy who can claim to know the Bible well. But I think it behooves us to ask this question of ourselves, to assess ourselves, to evaluate ourselves in terms of this particular statement from God to His good and faithful servants. Am I going to be one of those? Am I one of those? Have I been one? Yeah, probably. All the time? No, not all the time. But there are times, you know, when I'm conscious of it, when I'm mindful of it, and especially around the kids, especially around the kids in school, love their hearts. Some of them are just so stupid, and they got lousy parents, and they're terrible, terrible stories. And I see them as probably being the most important of these people in my sphere of influence, my family, my very small circle of friends, these children. And I remember one time, there was an administrator that I worked with, and his name was Herb Lord. And my first 3 or 4 years in school business were like his last 3 or 4 years in school business. He's getting ready to retire. And the nature of my job was kind of as a util. I'm classroom aide. They got some kind of designation for it. I don't even know what it is. I've only been doing this 21 years, so I'm not exactly, you know, up to speed on. I'm not up to speed yet on the nomenclature, but I was kind of itinerant in those days. Now my job is a little more dedicated, and that's cool too. But in those days, I would go different places. There's a thing called an IEP, Individualized Education Plan, and it's for special ed kids, and it's to help chart their course, their journey through the school system to graduation and out into the world. And I was called upon to do a lot of things. Now, in these meetings, you have to have some of the kids' teachers attend these meetings to talk about where they're going, how they're doing, and like that. So I would be called upon to watch classroom. Sit in a classroom, make sure everything was, you know, under control. These guys weren't going crazy and jumping out the windows and beating on each other and smoking or whatever. And so I had a very wide sphere of influence with the kids, and it came under the direction and the guidance of this assistant principal, Herb Lord. He and I worked together on a lot of stuff, and I called it solving crimes. We would fight crime together, he and I. And, you know, kids plot, and this is high school, especially high school kids, they plot, they scheme, they connive, they try to put stuff over on everybody and try to beat the system. And some of them got pretty good at it, but, you know, we got pretty good at figuring them out, too. And we were standing in the hallway one day, outside of lunch, and we were talking to the kids as they went by, and he looked at me. And we were talking about some of the kids. And he said, James, I'll tell you this. If you really knew, really truly knew the background, the stories on some of these kids, I promise you, you would never stop praying for them. You wouldn't. And that stayed with me. That stayed with me these almost 20 years from the time he said it was probably like his last year there, next to last year there. And we had lunch duty, and he looked at me and he said that. And I thought at the time I understood that. I really did. And I suppose even with, you know, I did as much as my limited experience and capacity doing my job in the school business would allow me. I got it. I mean, and it is tough. And over the years, that has been proven. He has been proven right to me time and time and time again. And I don't know if... I suppose I like to think of myself as a pretty decent guy. I like to think of myself as an encourager, a positive enabler. In other words, I want to help give these guys the things they need to get out there and navigate life. and not only navigate life, I want to give them things and examples that I hope will show them what it is to be a good person, to be a decent person, to be a good citizen, to be kind, to try and have a little consideration for other people, to not think about yourself as much as I think a lot, as much as I think a lot of us do. And I've been around now long enough to where I see a lot of those kids from those early days when I got into the school business, like I said, 20-some years ago. They got out. They got jobs. They got married. They had families. They started raising their own kids. And I see them doing well in those terms. I see them as good parents. I see them as families. And I hope, I really hope, that in some way, I was able to contribute to that in a positive way. And I'm thinking maybe I did because there are forever kids. Well, they're not kids. They're young men and women now. They're in their 20s and 30s. But I see them at Walmart. I'll see them at the gas station. And maybe I haven't seen them since I graduated. I get hugged. I get handshakes. I get brought up to speed, and it makes me happy. And I tell them, I'm proud of you, man. Look at what you've done. Because I remember what a hammerhead you were. And some of them, holy cow, some of them were. Some of them were pretty hammerheaded, but they're not now. And they're doing right by their spouses. They're doing right by their kids. They're doing right by their families and their communities, their neighborhoods. My next door neighbor was a guy. He was one of my guys in school. He mows my yard. He's got a zero turn, you know, really nice lawnmower. So it doesn't take him long. And he mows my yard to where all I've got to do is a little weed eating and trimming up with my push mower. And I'm grateful for that because my knees are not what they once were. And it was a workout in those days. So here's what happens. He mows my yard. I go get a package of chicken legs. Or chicken thighs. And I marinate them and I wrap them up in bacon and I put them in the smoker and I make them for him and his family. Because I appreciate what he did. He says, don't do that. You don't have to do that. I don't mind doing this. I mow your yard. I mow the guy's yard beside me. It doesn't take me any time. And I love it. Well, I am going to do this because I am grateful and appreciative of what he does for me. And I think you get the idea. I think you get the idea. And it really did bother me. Charlie Kirk's murder bothered me, but what bothered me worse was the reaction I was seeing from people whom I thought I knew. And maybe I do know them. Maybe you know, and I saw a lot of people who on social media who rejoiced about Charlie Kirk's murder get taken to task for it. I saw a lot of people get pushback. I saw, and maybe, and you know what? Maybe this was their Road to Damascus moment. Maybe this and the attacks that they, you know, and the people lining up to point out the wrongness of this maybe gave them pause. Maybe made them think, well, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't be doing this. Maybe I shouldn't have this attitude. I don't know. I hope so. Because the climate politically has been for a while pretty negative. A lot of people engaging in it on the right. So many people engaging in it on the left. The political violence that we see in this country. And I mean physical violence, property violence. Remember the Summer of Love? Remember Antifa? Occupy Wall Street? BLM, I promise you, these people are laying in the shadows and they're waiting for an opportunity to resurface. I promise you they are. And the moment that it comes, they will. The only problem is now that folks on our side on the right are stronger and we are less tolerant. We're less accepting. We're less likely to turn the other cheek when these people start doing what they do. And that's good and that's bad. Because these people aren't used to that. And the moment that that happens, a lot of them will just ratchet it up because they don't know any other play. And it's one thing that I quit engaging with liberals on, progressives and liberals on in social media. I've given up trying to talk to them. I've given up trying to debate. I'll point out things every now and then to, you know, hopefully shine a light on their hypocrisy. Sometimes it works. Most of the time it doesn't. When I'm mean-spirited, I'll needle them back. I have, especially for the Trump haters, I have this meme, and it's a picture of Elvis singing, and he's into it, man, and it's like the big Elvis, okay? So he's like jowly and sweaty, and his hair's all going all over the place, and he's singing, and what they did is they took Donald Trump's face in this picture, and they replaced Elvis's with Donald Trump's face. And the caption is, "I'm always on your mind, always on your mind, I'm always on your mind." And I'll lay it out there. When they get a little too far afield and they get a little too ugly with it, I just throw that out. And oddly enough, they really don't say a whole lot to me personally about it, but I notice they kind of go underwater there. They submerge for a little while until they can't stand it anymore. And he does something that sets them off the rails, and they do it again. And I just lay that out every now and then. But here's the thing. The reason I don't engage these guys like I used to, because I would go at it with them, man. I'd go right to the mats with them. And I would hammer and tong with them. Just go. And I would chew up their empty-headed, weak, lame-ass receipts, and I would bring my own. But you know what? I quit doing that. I quit it. And the reason, I think, at least the reason that stands out in my mind now, is the fact that they're boring. Think about it. Left-wing politics, progressive politics, is boring. It's always the same thing. It's been the same thing since the 1960s, since the Berkeley Free Speech Movement in 1964, 1965, up to today, up till today. And what is their politics? It's all good. Everything's good. You want to come here illegally and sponge off our entitlements program? Yeah, that's cool. You want to, if you're a guy and you wake up one day and you decide that you're going to walk around in women's clothes and insist that everybody call you Susan and that you're now a woman, and because you're a woman, that means you get to do womanly things like go to the woman's restroom or tell people that you have periods or that you're capable of having a baby, even though you are not a woman. You are a man dressed as a woman, a very ugly woman most times, because most regular-looking guys don't make good-looking chicks. That's all there is to it. But God, don't tell them that. Heaven's sakes, do not tell them that, because they will go apey on you. But it's all good. You want to hate the cops? Okay, that's cool. You can do that too. You want to reject America. You want to come to this country illegally. And you want not only to do that, but to reject American values, American traditions. That's okay. It's okay. You want to do whatever kind of drugs you want to do? That's cool. You want to have abortions after the baby's born? Yeah, hey, that's cool. People say that doesn't happen, but they were thinking about it. And if they could get away with it, they would. And I'll tell you something else. I think the abortion industry is at the point that if they could make every first pregnancy a mandatory abortion, I believe they would do so. If they could find some way to make it a government mandate that your first abortion, or your first pregnancy had to be an abortion, they would do it. They would straight up do it. And it's always the same thing. If you disagree with them, you're a Nazi, you're a goose-stepping, fascist, SOB, and you ought to be, you know, goose-stepping it straight into the gates of hell. And here's the thing. I've noticed this. Nazis. We're all Nazis, right? If you know, Donald Trump's a Nazi. I'm a Nazi. You're a Nazi. Wouldn't you like to be a Nazi, too? Be a Nazi. And we're not. We're not Nazis. You're not a Nazi. I'm not a Nazi. Donald Trump's not a Nazi. But they never, ever, ever call us communists. Have you noticed that? How many people Adolf Hitler responsible for killing? Probably 12 to 18 million. Mostly Jews. A lot of eugenic stuff going on in there as well. The Nazis loved Margaret Sanger. They loved the idea of eugenics. And they took that ball and ran with it. Read your history. Read your history. But they never refer to us as communists. Communism, how many people do you think Joe Stalin killed? Fidel Castro, Pol Pot, Ho Chi Minh, Mao Zedong. Did I mention Castro? Yeah, Castro. Any tin-horn communist dictator is, you know, their authority and their power rests on the skulls and decomposing bodies of the people whom they murdered. So, if we look at evil the way we're supposed to look at evil, and the Nazis were evil, ain't no doubt about it, and the communists, even more so. But they never compare us to communists. You know why they never compare us to communists? I'll tell you why. Look at their politics. Look at their authoritarian politics. They're more closely aligned. Progressives on the left are more closely aligned with communism. And that's why they don't do it. They're fans of Joe Stalin. They're fans of Pol Pot. They're fans of Fidel Castro. They're fans of Mao Zedong. They worship at the altar of the hammer and sickle. They do. And I think it's important that we recognize the inherent evil of the progressive left. And just look back to all those things I've said. And if you're a progressive, well, I don't believe in all that stuff. Well, okay, maybe you don't. Maybe you don't subscribe to all those tenets that I listed. However, you happily vote for elected officials who do. You don't want to be seen as a racist, but you vote for progressives who adopt racist and anti-Semitic policies. Maybe you're not pro-homosexual. Maybe you're not pro-gay. But you're afraid that if you're seen as not being gay or pro-gay, you're going to be perceived as something else. Something else entirely. A homophobe. If you're not seen taking up for illegal aliens, and that's what you do, you're taking up for illegal aliens. When you knock ICE, whose job is to round up people who are in this country, criminal or otherwise, who are here illegally, which makes, you know, even the ones who aren't criminals, you know, clearly committing a crime because they came here illegally. Because you don't want to be seen as a racist. So you support that stuff because you're worried about how you're perceived. You support the gay stuff. You support, you know, teaching kindergarten kids and elementary school kids. You support having these people, you know, these little kids being exposed to homosexual practices and homosexual doctrine. And I get it. You know, that's what they have to do because they can't reproduce. And since they can't reproduce, what do they have to do? They have to recruit. Same thing with these poor people with body dysmorphia issues. This is not something that needs to be cured with surgery. It can't be corrected with surgery. It can't be remedied. It needs to be corrected with psychological help, with psychiatric assistance, with care, with mental health care. It's not a physiological thing. It's a psychological thing. But you got people out here convincing little tomboys that they need to be boy boys, and effeminate little soft-hearted boys that they really need to be girls, and they don't. They need to come to terms with who they are, and sometimes people need help coming to terms with who they are. Maybe they can't do it on their own. Maybe the external influences around them preclude that from happening because they're children. They're outnumbered. They're overwhelmed. And people in positions of trust with these children, with these youngsters, with these young people, abuse that, thereby abusing these poor kids. Don't take my word for it. Check the rate of recidivism. Check the rate of recidivism. Recidivism. Gosh, it's early today, and I haven't been on the radio for a while, so I beg your indulgence. These people that go through all this stuff, they have these devastating hormonal programs that they have to stay on the rest of their lives. It affects their minds. Nobody wants to talk about the transgender mass shooters. But look at how many have been, how many have come to the forefront in the news, or look at how many have been covered up in the news in the last 10 years. These people occupy positions of trust. These are people that these kids look up to. And they don't see these people as someone who's going to lie to them. They trust these people. They believe what they say. And these people are evil. These people are using these poor kids, these poor suffering people who are going through, as pawns, as tools to further their agenda. Not what's to benefit the people who are suffering through this. It's all wrong. Everything they do is wrong. I know, you know, you can say that, well, it's good intention, man, because they're sensitive people and they want to do good by these folks. Do they really? Maybe some of them do. But I think the largest measure of them see folks like this, or the people who subscribe to these doctrines, particularly politicians, as useful idiots, as people they can use as weapons, as tools to further their own sick, evil agenda. And it makes me angry, and I want to, you know, I want to take them to task for it, but it's a waste of time. And I'm not going to lower myself. I'm not going to bathe in the slime, in the excrement that these doctrines that the left have are derived from. Because that's what you have to do. If you're going to engage these guys, you got to get down in it. And I think there are other ways to engage them. And I think one of the ways to engage them, it's going to sound crazy, is to disengage. See them for what they are. Yeah, absolutely. Call them out on it. Absolutely. It's not going to do you any good to engage them. They know what they know what they know. And it's not going to change. What has to happen is an awakening. And you're going to have to find people. And I think there are some that you can be a light to, be a beacon to, in how you demonstrate your own beliefs and how you conduct yourself. How do you do that? Well, I don't know. Who lives next door to you? What do you know about them? Do you know anything about them? You know, nowadays, we really don't. Back in the days of porches, We did. Did you know what I mean? Nowadays, homes, you look at the front of a lot of homes, they don't have porches. We see kind of a resurrection, a return to that trend, but, you know, 30, 40 years, there were like a couple of cement steps, a concrete stoop, and that was it. Now, the neighborhood that I grew up in Beckley, West Virginia, at a place called Sheridan Avenue, every house on that street had a porch. Pretty decent sized one, too. And do you know why? Because in those days, neighbors visited. That's what the porch was for. It gave you an opportunity to talk with your neighbor. It gave you an opportunity to get to know them, understand them. And there was a lot of porch sitting in the summertime on Sheridan. All the kids playing here and there. Somebody's mom and dad would come over and sit on our porch. My mom and dad would go sit on somebody else's porch. It was commonplace. It's not now. But anyway, back to your neighbor. Do you know him? Do you know anything about him at all? And you might. You might not. And if you do, I think that's awesome. Do what you can to try and expand upon that relationship. Talk with him. How about a beer and a hot dog? Or a Coke and a hot dog? And a little bit of fellowship. You think you can't get to know them? Yeah, you can get to know them. And you can find out. And maybe you're not like-minded. Maybe you've got different points of view. And that's not really surprising. We all do. But there has to be. And I think it's lain dormant for a long, long time, a commonality, a common ground between you and your neighbor, between you and your neighbors, between you and your neighborhood, your community, your town. And it's difficult to do because we've been trained not to. We've been trained to mind our own business. We've been trained to keep to ourselves. We've been taught not to get involved. Go to work, go home, keep to yourself. Maybe you don't even let your kids play out on the street. I don't know. I'm 63. In the mid-1960s, mid-1970s, it was different. It was a different time. Especially in a rural area like West Virginia, because we had a tendency to cling to those older ways a lot more tightly than people did in the cities. So you find that commonality. And you expand upon it. Are there going to be things you disagree about? Absolutely, positively, there are going to be things that you disagree about. But you'll probably find that there are that many more things that you do agree upon. And that's the important thing. And by that, through that, by developing those relationships with the people next door, with the families next door, with the guy two or three houses down the street, with the people in the next apartment, your neighbors in the trailer park, wherever it is, it doesn't matter. You may find that there is so much more in common. And that may give you a better understanding as to why many politicians work so hard to cultivate that division, that isolation amongst us. We all hate crooks. We all hate crooked politicians. Or we should, at any rate. And I think that's what worries them, because if the alliances changed, if the relationships changed, and more people understood that you and I, together, and I'm not talking about ideology, I'm talking about right and wrong. You and I together spot right and wrong and recognize corruption and evil for what it is, and we decide to make a stand against it, those guys are going to poop their pants. That's the last thing on earth they want, is for our neighbors to go back to being neighborly. For our people to become friends again. Friends and neighbors. Where you hear that these days? Well, you heard it here, but where else you hear it? You don't hear it anywhere. And it's time for us to change that. And I think by doing those things, those simple little things, like I said, a beer and a hot dog, shoveling the elderly couple's driveway, cutting the old man's yard who has bad knees. those are good things. Those are good things. That comradeship, that fellowship, that would terrify those people in Washington, D.C. It would. Both sides. Because I guarantee you there are as many Republicans invested in that philosophy of division and conquering as there are Democrats. I promise you. And if you're really, truly, genuinely committed or interested in positive political change, you can't do it sitting in the House. You can't do it as effectively on social media as you can in getting out. City council meetings. School board meetings. County commission meetings. Go. Find out what's going on. Organize with these people who see things the same way that you do. And go. These people bank on you not doing those things. That's how they stay in power. They bank on your lack of involvement. They cultivate your disengagement. Don't take my word for any of this, man. I mean, it's just stuff. I'm not the only guy saying this. Don't take my word for it. Look into it yourself. I've had probably 100 false starts in the last 2 years when it came to coming back and recommitting to doing radio. And again, it's something I've loved. I've had a love affair with radio all my life. And this is something I've always wanted to do. And for a long time, I didn't do it because I didn't think it counted. And it may not. I didn't think it mattered. And again, it may not. But maybe somebody out there listening to this says, you know what? Dude's got a point. He's got a point. How do I do this? How do we reclaim that American fellowship, that American comradeship? Well, we're not going to do it hanging around the house, watching the news, and hating life. We're going to do it by going out, waving to your neighbor, wishing them a Merry Christmas, a hot dog and a beer. Sometimes it's not any more difficult than that. I want to thank you guys, those of you who listen. I'm very grateful for that. I really am. And I know this hasn't been a particularly political show. I didn't really mean to preach, but these are some things that I've been thinking about over the last year or so. And I don't know, in the past shows where I'd halfway try to do something and it would just be mailed in, that I was able to articulate it as well as I think I have today. And I want to thank you for listening, and I want to thank you in advance if you decide to take my advice and try some of these things. And it may not work the first time, it may not work the third time, but that doesn't mean you quit. you hang in there. And you find a different, you know, you just keep trying. And you'll know whether or not it's going to work. And if it doesn't work, then you move on to the next person, the next group. And you try the same thing. And you make yourself available. You put yourself out there as accepting. Of trying to live those American ideals. Teddy Roosevelt said this. There is no room in this country for hyphenated Americanism. German Americans, Irish Americans, English Americans, French Americans, Scandinavian Americans, Italian Americans, doesn't matter. There's no such thing as a hyphenated American who is a good American. The only man who is a good American is the man who is an American and nothing else. I'm going to touch on this before I say goodbye. We've all seen the what is going to be a catastrophic scandal for not only Tim Walz and Minnesota Democrats, but Democrats all over the United States with the Somali thing. The whole point in coming to America is to become America, is to assimilate, all right? Assimilation. You become American. You leave the ways of the old country behind, and you come here. And that's how it used to be, because you had a chance, you had an opportunity. The immigrants that we have here, that Obama and leading administrations up till now have allowed to come in here, they don't do that. They come in here to get a check. They come in here to get a check and live like they did in the old country. Muslims do this. They come here to get a check, and then, you know, they want to do what they do. They want to do honor killings. They want to engage in pedophilia and pederasty. They want to groom. They want to rape. They want to hate Jews. And it's not just Muslims, and I'm not singling them out. Anyone who comes here with the idea of gaining wealth, gaining money, entitlement, migrants. We don't have a place for you. When you come here, when you come to America, you come to be an American. The melting pot. That's why they called it that. It was because you left the old ways behind. And you came to America to be an American. People call me racist for that. And yes, they have. I've been called racist for that. I don't really care. I mean, racist, Nazi. This is, you know, I've had it thrown at me, and it's not a big deal, and it doesn't bother me anymore. But if you're coming here to America, come to be an American. Don't come to be a Somali who lives in America, a Guatemalan who lives in America, and takes and does not provide. Well, I don't know, man. I guess for a first shot back at doing this, I guess we're doing pretty good. Not as bad as I thought. Went a lot easier and quicker than I thought. Of course, you know, I've had a few things I've wanted to say for the last couple of years, and I think maybe I got some of them out. I don't think this was a podcast for you guys as much as it was therapy or catharsis for me. And I appreciate you listening again. Thank you, all you guys that listen out there. Falstaff62@yahoo.com. By all means, you know, send me something. I'm on Facebook, James Bostick, B-O-S-T-I-C-K. And you ought to be able to find me. You'll know the page. You'll see a lot of Godzilla crap and stupid dad jokes. That's me. Okay, so you can inbox me there. I hope that you guys had a safe and a blessed and a very, very Merry Christmas. And likewise, my most extreme best wishes for all of you in the coming new year. That's about all the time we have. God bless you. God bless America. We'll see you next time here on A Conservative's Perspective. You guys be cool.